Welcome to Shut Up and Ride, another podcast, another day. I'm here with the wonderful Ben, but what has happened? We haven't got a Simi today, Ben. What has happened? Sad face.
Very sad face. Simon's had pretty pants week, really, I think. Well, yeah. Brilliant week. With pants things, they've lost a dog today. Which is not lost, as in it's been run over in a horrible accident, and that's, yeah.
So we are sending much love to Simi, his partner's dog, sadly. And then also he came third at Blair, which is amazing.
Woo!
But then parted company with his pony in the warm-up, and I think he might have given himself a little bit of a sore head. So we have told him to sit this one out because we love him very much, but we are sending Simi all the pod love in the world. The shut up and ride. It doesn't really sound very sympathetic, does it, saying shut up and ride?
No, but if you're a fan of ours, and if you probably are, if you're listening to this one, and you've got any hilarious videos of, say, you getting decked or something, now's a good time to send them to Simon. Cheer him up. So come on. If you're listening to this and you could make Simon laugh, please do.
With me, it's always a hilarious video of a goat. That always cheers me up.
Hilarious video of a goat.
Love goats.
My hilarious moment. I'm not moving away from Simon in the warm-up because that video is insane. But my hilarious moment of life and stress this week was, for those of you that don't know, that me and George are having a baby, which is very exciting.
I was wondering when I was allowed to tell people this. So we can tell people now. I'm not good with secrets, and I've known this a very long time. And it's been very stressful, Ben, because I've nearly tripped up. I even got in trouble with George because I wasn't meant to know.
You got in trouble with George? Do you think how much trouble I got in with George for that? No, I...
Oh, thank God.
I think we can come clean because I was doing a presentation at an event that was being live streamed across the world. And one of my friends was presenting it. It was for Warwick Schiller. And he was like, come on, Warwick. Come on, Ben. Tell everybody the news. And I was like, okay, here we go. So anyway, yeah, George and I are having a baby, which is fantastic and exciting. And so because of that, me and George thought, should we get some practice in? Right? Should we get some practice
in? I think you've already done the practicing. That's what's got you in this problem.
So my sister-in-law said, me and my husband want to go out. Me and my partner want to go out. Why don't you and George babysit our 2-year-old and 6-month-old?
Two and a 6-month? That's not practice.
Two-year-old and a 6-month-old. Yeah.
Wow.
And I think we both learned a lot. So I said to George, he was like, I'm going to pick them up. I'll be at our house at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, cool, I'll be there when you get there. And she was like, no, it's going to be fine. Don't rush. So I was like, okay. So I kept riding horses and stuff. I could see Jenny's face. I kept riding horses and stuff. And as I walked through the front door at 5:30, she's there with screaming baby, very cross toddler. And I was like, oh, are you okay, darling? And I learned a lot. The baby cried for 2.5 hours. I am not ready. So if any of you have got any brilliant tips, yeah, good with
bloody
horses.
Hell. Right, can I just say, that's not like having a practice. That's like me going in on the stage live at the Olympic breaking competition and having to fucking go for it in front of millions. It's like almost doing a ray gun of the baby world, because Jesus holy wept. You don't like build yourself up, take the 2-year-old on its own first. Like, don't do both. What were you thinking?
I'm
not the person to ask as well. Like I said, I called my son a dickhead the other day by accident. So probably not the best to ask for parenting advice. When I was when I had my children, I had James first. I got thrown out of baby yoga. I got thrown out of baby sensory. I've been thrown out of a library. You're looking at me strangely. Baby yoga, right? So you know all these classes everyone goes on. So I thought I should probably try them to make sure that my son develops properly. And went to baby yoga, and all the other babies are just lying there all serene and everyone's doing the downward dog or whatever it is. And James just won't shut up. He doesn't want to stop moving. He's crying because he just is a fidget bum. And he was only a few months old. And I just was like, will you just stop being such a wanker? And whole room went silent. At the end of the session, the woman told me it probably wasn't for me and that I shouldn't come back.
Oh,
and then
goodness.
Baby sensory went to Swindon to do baby sensory. And when I arrived, I was like, delighted. It's next to a drive-through McDonald's.
Perfect.
So I got my McDonald's, went in, like hash brown, morning coffee. The woman's like, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's not safe. No food allowed in here. And I was like, well, they're eating. In fairness, I was pointing at a six-month-old being fed or a nine-month-old. But she was like, that's a baby. I was like, yeah, but that baby's eating. Why can't I eat? You can't have a baby sensory next to a McDonald's and expect a sleep-deprived woman not to eat it. So again, I was asked to leave because I refused to throw away my McDonald's.
I love that. So what I've learned is parenting tips from Jen is that prioritize McDonald's breakfast over child every time. McDonald's first.
Happy mum, happy baby. Isn't that the saying?
Yeah. So that makes me feel better. I feel like I can.
You can do it.
Not get kicked You've out got of this. Any classes. Yeah.
No, but just don't look after other people's children. I like mine, but I can't bear other people's. I love the fact that anyone who's tuning into this podcast for the first time, who's thinking they're coming to some kind of like equestrian-based themed podcast, is getting terrible parenting advice instead. They'll be like, yeah, what the holy Jesus?
We get round to talking horses. I'm sure we talked horses at some point in the last episode. Yeah.
Anyway, massive congratulations. Yeah, it's amazing news. Terrifying, but you don't have to worry about it for a few months, so you'll be fine.
Ah, I think, yeah, and George is just thrilled because she's like, oh, I'm actually going to be pregnant and give birth when you're not travelling around the blooming world doing shows. So she's very, so it's all worked out perfect, which is...
Oh, giving birth is the worst. So it was filming with Roz Cantor. Now, you know nothing about everyone in the world, but Roz Cantor was our world champion, has just come back from the Olympics and won event in gold. She is amazing, right? And I was filming with her once, and she was, and I was really pregnant with Delilah. And she was like, what's it like giving birth? What's it like being pregnant? I was like, it's the worst. Giving birth is the worst. There is nothing worse on this earth. It's horrible. There's no getting away from it. It's just the worst. And I went on a rant of how awful being pregnant was and how awful having babies was. Literally 2 days later, she messaged me to tell me she was pregnant. I go, shit.
You're a brilliant motivational speaker. The advice I got given by one of my guy friends who's got a child, and I was like, come on, now's your time. Yours is like 8. Like, give me the wisdom. And he was like, during the giving birth bit, he was like, just stay topside. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, why? And he was like, if you imagine, it looks like someone pushing an Easter egg through a lasagna. That's what he said to me. He was like, don't go bottom side. So that's all I can see now. So we've got all this to come. I've seen mares give birth.
Oh my God, don't compare your wife to a mare. That is all I'm saying. In the moment when it happens, do not, Benjamin Atkinson, compare George to a mare giving birth. If you want to have your balls intact at the end of that, do not say that. All right, I'm just throwing that out there.
We've already started. So my mother-in-law did quite a lot in the Irish draft breeding sort of world, and then warm bloods and stuff now. And whenever she thinks a broodmare is getting ready to pop, she will sit on her iPad in the corner of the stable on a deck chair and gets the mare's tail plaited and stuff. And so when we've been talking about George giving birth and they're like making plans and this and that, and I'm like, don't worry, when Linda plaits her hair and then sits there on the iPad, we'll know she's about to pop. It'll be fine. She'll be grand.
She goes, she'll wait until it's nighttime and no one's around.
Yeah, exactly.
My God.
That's my... Not if
That's
you're
your
doing
big
your,
news.
I was going to say if you're doing your what's annoyed you this week, the children did not annoy me. My own naivety. I was like, me, George, 2 kids, easy. No.
Yeah, I had 2 under 2. I didn't mind it. But in my mind, again, probably shouldn't compare my children to horses. This is my bit of parenting advice for you, okay? This is serious advice. So when you're training a horse... Okay, I am going somewhere with this, don't worry. When you're training a horse, if I was to train a horse, the first leg yield or the first, even when you first sit on them and you get them used to just the feel of the pressure of your leg or the feel of the weight of your hand on the rein, right?
Yeah.
Or with your stuff where there's no reins or saddles, the first time you push them away or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't get annoyed with them if they didn't do it because they've never done it before. They don't understand it. Okay, so you can't get angry because you're teaching them something they do not understand, they've never done. So when my kids were born, in my head, I was like, they've never worn clothes. So when you're getting them dressed and they start screaming, of course they're going to. They've never worn clothes. Yeah. They've never seen half of the stuff that most everything you've ever showed them. They've never drunk out of your boob. I did breastfeed. They've never done any of this. It's the first time. They've never had to sleep through the night. There's no point getting annoyed with them. They've never done it. So I kind of related my patience that I have with horses to raising my kids, and it kind of made me less stressed. I didn't find it like the worst ever.
That makes I worry that I'll think of it too much like training horses in that mindset. But that makes sense to me, because like you say, when you're training a horse to learn anything new, I imagine it as, you know, you're putting down that first layer of paint. Or think mm-hmm. of it as like, you know, or making a book. And the first time you try that leg yield, that's one page. But a book's more than one page. And every single time you try that next exercise or the next thing, you're adding another page to the book. And you can't see the progress in front of you. But then when you look back after a year, it's huge. Well done for making that, steering us towards a horse training.
Excellent. So that is how I think of it. So yeah, when it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you want to lob your child out of a window, just be like, I wouldn't do this if it was a horse. I'd be patient. Because I think we forget that there's no difference, really. They've never done it. It's just our brains developed past a point of learning. So our expectations become higher, but it's still the same now. Like, my kids are upstairs doing a bit of maths, and I find it really hard to be tolerant. I have to be like, right, they've never done this before. I think my lack of tolerance for the maths and the learning comes from the fact that I hated it myself at school.
My dad told me when I was younger, I was like, Dad, how did you get on with like us when we were babies and stuff? And he was like, yeah, it was all right. When you got to be about 10 years old and we were going out jumping a lot, that was a lot more fun. So I was like, that's my dad's version of parenting. He was like, yeah, once you started to ride properly, then we had fun.
Then we didn't want to have you adopted.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Right. So I want to hear about Dublin.
It was.
You've just got back from Dublin. I'm a big fan of the RDS. I just think it's one of the greatest shows. I love all the Irish guys. When I'm over there, when I was on Sky TV and things like that days, I used to get like chased down the road for my autograph, whether I was at the show or not. Like, yeah, like horses are so big over there. So I was I felt quite famous when I was in Dublin. But did you love it? How was the performances? Did you crash? What annoyed you?
So it was incredible. So anybody who doesn't know, the Royal Dublin Show it's just a horse show. So we have events similar in England, maybe like the Great Yorkshire and stuff, but they're also about farming and cattle and sheep and stuff. But the Royal Dublin Show
is
a horse show. Yeah, but that stadium is massive. On the night when it was sold out, we asked them and they said, yeah, there'll be 18,500 people in here tonight. Yeah, which just
be a bit sick, John.
See, so my least favorite shows to do are one day shows in my local area, because it's a small crowd and you know every face, like you know every single person. I think that makes me feel sick. Whereas when it's a massive lump of a crowd like that, it doesn't bother me at all. Mm. And that, with those, we also heard a number. I think they said there were 1,600 horses attending in the event. Which is just mad. So on the scale of it, that was incredible. We did 7 performances while we were there. Absolutely every one of them was bang on. I was so pleased. My boys really came through for me. What was difficult about being there? So anybody that saw us there may have noticed that I didn't do 2 performances that were the same. Every performance was different. I used similar elements, but in different, you know, constructions. And it's because one of the agreements that you have when you agree to perform there is that you won't be a pain about the show jumps. So as in you...
So you've got to go round them.
You just got to go round. So like, for example, I just did Bolesworth in England, the 2-week festival there. And before every morning, I sit down with the course builder, course designer, and we have a kind of, you know, I'm sure it's easier to construct the Treaty of Versailles, but we have a little thing where we go through it. And it's like, is there any chance you could move that one? No, could you leave the poles off it until I've finished so I could get through standing on the horses and stuff? Whereas at Dublin, they said there are three conditions. You bring a lot of horses to fill the arena. you have to work on grass and not complain about working on grass, and you have to work around the show jobs. So the first two, easy. I always perform with a lot of horses. I work on grass all the time. But I don't know if I quite knew what I was signing up for with the show jumps. Because when you go to that main arena, if there are three classes on during the day, they put up all the fences for all three classes.
Oh, yeah.
And they just stay there. So that was a challenge. Like, you imagine, I'm running around with like six or eight horses, or I'm standing on a team of six in the long reins, and I have to like navigate my way through, which would be a challenge anyway. But because the show was, they have some ridiculous prize money show jumping. One class there, the winner got $500,000. Like, and they said that by 2026, the prize for that class will be $1 million for first prize, which is just nuts. So obviously that's going to take the spotlight at the event. So they were worried about their grass arena. So I didn't get to rehearse in the main ring.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I didn't get to rehearse in the main ring at all at any point, which was just mental. So that first performance going in, like, and they were nice about it. Like, they said, look, it's just rained a lot more than we thought. We're worried you're going to trash the grass. This is just the way
and
it's going to happen.
And if you're going to pay the riders $1 million to jump,
exactly,
then you better suck it up.
Yeah, and wow. I know my place. I'm there. I'm a dancing girl. I know that. Like, I'm not I'm not the main event.
You still haven't sung for me on this podcast yet. Come on, I need some singing at some point.
We need to get another 1,000, and then I'll sing. Another 1,000 followers.
We've had nearly 10,000 listens, but we need Instagram.
If you grow the Instagram,
you're
going to
sing.
A sing song. But so that was a challenge. And the other thing I would say, which was mental, was one warm-up arena. Imagine 40 show jumpers competing at top FEI level for prize money like we've just described, trying to warm up and do their best to warm up in a, it was a big arena, but still not massive, with me either standing on a team of six in the long reins or running around with eight loose horses also trying to warm up. I'm not sure I made many friends.
I can imagine the likes of like Conor Swale being like, Jesus, what is he doing? Apologies for my Irish accent. Conor Swale does not sound like that. Disclaimer.
So yeah, that was, honestly, I can't believe we didn't get any videos from the warm-up arena, because it was just the most, it would be chaotic to ride in there anyway. And so the boys
did
terrifying.
So well. How did it go? Was the boys on fire?
Perfect.
Did they mind? Did they kind of raise their game?
They were absolutely perfect. I think the way I describe it in the warm-up, especially when I was stood on them in the long reins, was one day I hope I can have as much faith in myself and my control over these horses as the show jumpers around me do. Because, my goodness, I think those people warming up around me thought I have a lot more control, like I'm riding one. Because I would be like cantering around on a team of six, and someone would just cut in front of me and stop and go on their phone. So I'm screeching to a halt thinking, boys, do not crash into, you know, $500,000, £1 million worth of show jumping horse. Yeah.
And the rest. I'm sorry, I love Malik, but I don't think one of his hooves would have the same price tag. Obviously, to us, he's priceless.
So, like, we have a joke that, like, I can do something complex and technically challenging and beautiful with eight horses that are all loose in England. And sometimes people just don't even get it. Or they get it, or they don't know. They don't see in it what I get from it. And then I can do something really simple, like ask one horse to bow, and the entire English crowd goes insane. Whereas over there, they seem to get everything. Like, it was such a, like, it felt like the entire crowd was so horsey, so much into the equestrian side of life, that every little thing that I did, they were just going mental. So yeah, we had the best time in Dublin. We absolutely loved it. It was amazing.
It's so cool. I'm so glad it went well, because it is such a massive stage. But also, as you say, like the Irish, they are so knowledgeable. I actually, don't know if you know this, I trained in Ireland down in Wexford. That's my background. It does make me laugh, like a lot of people question my equestrian knowledge or anything because I never speak about it. I was actually reading Pammy Hutton some of the things that people slagged me off for online because Pammy Hutton was getting abused online. So I sent her a screenshot of some of the things people have thrown at me. Ghastly woman, knows nothing about horses, things like that. But the Irish, they will also tell you, Ben, if you weren't doing it well.
Yeah.
Because which they is... have such knowledge.
Yeah, which so is yeah, good.
If you were shit, you would have known about it.
Yeah, and that's what made me, naming no names, but there are other people that had been there that they weren't happy with, and they were delighted to tell me in all the ways they weren't happy and stuff. And I was like, oh God, if this goes badly, I'm never live it down.
Right, I'm going to tell you what's annoyed. Is this annoyed me or is it just a good story? So I've just been down in Kentucky. I tell you, that's annoyed me. Right, I'm going to tell, this is what's annoyed me and then I'll tell you the other story. In Kentucky, they, at breakfast, plastic. You're served on a plastic plate and you have to open a pack of knife, fork, spoon if you just want a spoon. And then all of that gets thrown away. I'm a bit of an eco-warrior and it really got on my tits. I went up to the receptionist. Why do you guys not just wash up? Like, this was a case at the horse show I was at. Their carbon footprint in Kentucky must be, it's just awful. I went to the receptionist and I get called ma'am a lot in Kentucky. Again, apologize for the accent. She was like, well, hey, ma'am, we've got the biggest landfill in the whole of America. I'm like, not something to be proud of. Well, we don't have to worry about plastic here. We got the biggest landfill and we can just fill it. Not kind of how it works. So I was a bit on my high horse because I was just getting so angry. So I opened my cutlery on the first day and then used that for all three of my meals throughout the horse show because it wound me up so much. I just couldn't bear it. Literally the VIP, everything. It just does my head in. And I didn't eat breakfast in that hotel because I was just so anti the fact that they just threw their plates and plastic away.
If you go again, are you going to take your own cutlery in your suitcase from home?
Absolutely. And I need, like, people send in your ideas of what I can take. I want, like, a little fold-out plate. I was really angry at myself that I didn't take my reusable water bottle. There is literally the plastic bottles there, and there's no way of recycling it. It all goes in the same bin. Kentucky Horse Park, you need to get your shit together. I don't know what it's like at other events, but I was honestly, and I said it to the top-notch people at the USHJA, the United States Hunter Jumper Association. I was like, I love working for you guys. I'm probably get fired now. I'll get cancelled. But your carbon footprint is actually disgusting. You need to sort it out. So yeah, whether I'll be working at Kentucky again next year.
I think you have to be confirmed. Point though, because like whenever I've run a marathon, that's the thing that I'm always the most disgusted at is the waste.
Yeah.
With the plastic bottles and stuff. Like people will just run, grab a bottle, take one swig and then throw it on the side of the road. Surely there's a better way. Because I don't, like me and my mates were talking about it and we said, could you not do a marathon where you just have a collapsible mug or a tin mug that you can like stick on your belt and then at the water station you can fill up with water? But it just seems. I do know what you mean. I try and be more eco.
Do you know what? Everyone doing something makes a difference. But now this blew my mind, Benjamin. Stop laughing at me. You and Simon just spend your whole time laughing at me. This didn't annoy me. This made me curious and laugh. On the way to Kentucky, you go through security for America in Canada. So they're American customs people, but you get it checked. So once you've got on the plane, if you're flying to the States from Canada, then you're done. So anyway, they always check, like, what are you doing there? And I've got an I visa, which is an international, like, journalist visa. So I'm allowed to work in America. So he was like, oh, you've got an I visa. What kind of journalist are you? I say, oh, I actually work in equestrian media. His little eyes lit up, this very Southern American guy. And he was like, what about that English girl who hit the horses? Oh, this is awkward. I was like, oh, I actually know her. Yeah. And we had a little chat about it. And he was like, so what do you think? And I was like, oh, well, obviously we can't condone it. I felt like saying, listen to the Shut Up and Ride episode 4 podcast.
Yeah.
It was just a very awkward conversation. And then do you know what he said at the end? Well, ma'am, again, I just don't get it. Are you just not allowed to hit your horses in England? It's not often I'm lost for words, Ben. especially when you're trying to get into a country. Couldn't disagree with him because I didn't want to not be allowed in. But I was like, no, not something we encourage.
Well, at least
so he didn't see it as a problem.
At least maybe it means that we don't need to worry so much about social licensing, if that's the feeling of the general population. But I think it is evident, isn't it? There's a... see if I can find it, because I saved something. I'll have to send it to you, because I won't be able to show it to everybody it properly. But you can sort of see it there, Jen. I'll send it to you, and you can post it on the Instagram.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a poster that was made, I think, 110 years ago, 115 years ago.
Fighting
for animal welfare in horses, about bearing reins. And the whole thing is, one side is restrained and in pain, and it says, give him his head, he cannot work like that, could you? And then the other is like freedom and power, nice, easy position, head down. So we think like, oh, we're not getting very far in these conversations now. And when I saw that, it broke me even further, because I was like, oh, wow, people have been going on at this for more than 100 years. And we're having the same conversations. Insanity.
For me, I've grown up in lots of different countries, Cyprus and Spain, and I worked in Spain for a long time. And I'm not joking when I say some of the, don't get me wrong, there's some horrific things that go on in England and all over the world. I mean, I've seen horses in Spain. So this guy was keeping his horses and he wanted their coat. He didn't want them to itch and sweet itch and all those things you get in Spain. He didn't want them to rub on the stable walls or on the doors. So they were caged in, and then there was electric fencing around the inside of the horse's stable. And this stable was tiny for this horse. So this horse, every time it turned round, got an electric shock, or if it tried to rub or anything, it got an electric shock. And this horse was literally brought out to be ridden, never turned out, and then was brought out to be ridden in the farrier. I mean, that is one of many, many things I could tell you. Like, I rescued one horse called Roman, and when I took him over and I took his head collar off and put mine on, the bridle off, the inside of the noseband had spikes in it to keep him under control, like sharp spikes, the serotonins that they wear. The list is endless of the cruelty that we've seen. I helped out in a donkey sanctuary in Cyprus. I rescued a donkey that had been set fire to. Like, the stuff that I've seen. So I think for me, when like you see horses in like being well looked after, I think it's so like what I've seen has been so horrific. It's not even comparable to anything.
We said in the episode about Charlotte, two people I saw in Dublin handling horses that I thought were handling them in an inappropriate manner. And one person, I needed to just keep watching them, and then they stopped and sharpened up. And the other person, I had to step up and be like, I didn't have to say, all I did was step them and said, excuse me, I think there's a better way to handle that. And and then maybe they get round the corner, but you know, like that was, I would say that if there was anything about being at that last competition that I was a bit like, what? I've never seen so many horses in chiffneys. And you're like, what are you doing? Do you need a chiffney to lead it? You just said you've met a donkey that's been set on fire. I can't even comprehend the malice in someone that would get them towards the point where you could set an animal on any animal on fire.
But it was horrific.
How, what? Like, but then, like you say, it's just because there are, it's so, you can't compare atrocities, can you? Because otherwise.
But that's what I think happens a little bit, is we say, oh, there's this worse stuff happening in the world, and these horses are treated like royalty, and they've got a spa, and they've got all this. Still doesn't mean that your training has to be like that.
Yeah.
Just because they live this life of luxury in the box, and they, honestly, these horses have a better life than me. I never get to go to a bloody spa. But that's not an excuse.
It was really interesting, actually, in Dublin, Tristan Tucker was there, TRT. And he has a thing.
I love Tristan. I want him on our podcast.
Amazing. So he has these three things that he calls the dictator, the mentor, and the mummy. And so the dictator is someone who, when they handle a horse, is overly hard on it. And he's like ragging that horse around. And everything that horse does, they're like, no, you'll do as I tell you. Like, ugh! And obviously we all know that's wrong. That's too far on one end of the spectrum. Then if we go to the other end of the spectrum, we have someone that's terrified of their horse, but is like, no, it's all right. It's scared. So while that horse is freaking out at being nervous in the new environment, or, you know, has been spooked by something, that person offers the horse absolutely no comfort. And so the horse gets more and more stressed out and walks all over the top of
them. They need a leader. They want to be led. Some horses, not all. I think Malik is your leader, but that's
Malik
another conversation.
My leader. He is definitely my ego extraction tool, is Malik. But he's, and that idea that we're aiming to be the mentor, and like that's something, it was so lovely to hear it put like that so succinctly. Because it's that same thing with us. Like, I find that most people will mistreat a horse when they get scared or they get worried that they're going to look an idiot. And those are the two things. Either, you know, if they're riding a horse and it starts to, let's say someone's riding in the warm-up and a horse spooks a little bit, like a tiny little nip to the side, and then you see that person seesawing on the reins and pulling its head in and kicking it, and it's like, oh, you're overriding in an unproductive manner to try and prevent the next spook. And then you've got someone else who, the moment the horse does something wrong, they land it one because they're just trying to, I don't know, dominate out of it. And so trying to learn those ticks and tells in your own brain, oh, I'm getting a bit nervous, I need to really watch what I'm doing, or, oh, I'm feeling a bit vulnerable and watched and a bit foolish, a bit like I look like an idiot. Try and notice that in yourself, and then use, you know, I mean, start practicing noticing those tells in yourself the same as you would for a horse. So that, like, if you're at home, maybe it means time to put the horse away and have a coffee and then get the horse back out in half an hour or an hour. Always reserve the right to walk away. If you're at a competition, maybe it just means going, okay, actually, I'm going to, in the warm up, and you start feeling a bit like that, maybe it's time to just walk a bit. Maybe it's time to just take the pressure off a bit, you or the horse.
I wrote a blog, that's how old I am, not a vlog, a blog called, I hate the term On The Bit. And as you can imagine, with a title like that, it went a bit viral. But one of my main things from that was the term On The Bit is just awful. Everyone knows it should be free from behind, blah, 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 blah. But one of my main points in that was we are so under pressure from people watching to make our horses put their head down. Yeah. And to look fancy and look pretty, whether it's working effectively, if someone turns round for that split seconds and wants you on their horse, you want it to look like, oh, look, I have control and the horse is on the bit. And there is this massive thing of caring about other people's opinions.
Yeah.
And that puts pressure on you to then puts pressure on your horse. And if we were all just a bit fucking nicer to each other, and instead of going, oh, look at your horse, it's going around like a donkey, well, maybe that horse is having a bit of problems and needs to go around like a fucking donkey. Like, if we were all just a bit nicer to each other and less judgy, then the pressure wouldn't be on the rider, which would then be on the horse. Does that make sense? Like, I think it all comes from this fear of being judged and the fact that horses cost a bloody fortune and we just want them to go well sometimes. Right. Before we move on to Instagram, which I need to tell you about because we've had loads of questions. I was trying to. So I've had two incidents now, which is very exciting. One that happened in Kentucky again. I was chatting to someone about organising an interview and this woman screeched, are you from Shut Up and Ride podcast? I said, what? She's like, I recognise your voice. Are you Jenny from Shut Up and Ride? So in the middle, on the outside of the arena, someone knew our podcast, which made me feel very happy.
Which
and then
incredible.
Her screeching, everyone was like, love it. And then we never go out for dinner because we have no childcare. But my mum was here, so she offered to babysit. And Gregor's, I am going somewhere with this. Someone from work was like, oh, do you want to come for drinks with me and my wife? So we went to this cocktail bar in Squamish. Yeah, cocktail bar. Look at me, out, with two of my friends. And I ended up sitting next to one of their friends who loves horses. And we were talking about it. And she was like, hang on a second, are you from the Shut Up and Ride podcast? And I was like, well, yes, I am. Hi, my name's Jenny. And she was like, oh, I love that. I was like, hang on a second. And to both of these ladies, so why do you guys like the Shut Up and follow the Shut Up and Ride podcast? Oh, we just love Ben Atkinson. Thanks. Fuck's sake. Oh, but anyway, how random is that? Like a random person I met in Canada and a random person I met in the UK. So anyway, this story goes on. My friend then was like, what, Jenny, you've got a podcast. They're not horsey. And he was like, who's this Ben Atkinson person? So he Googled you. Do you know what happens when you go on Google and look you up?
Is it the butchered information? Is it the, because my date of birth is the same as Rowan Atkinson's son's date of birth?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, he's Rowan Atkinson's son. I was like, no, he's not. I know his dad. I fancy his dad. His dad's called Mark. But they were like, no, on Wikipedia, it says his dad's Rowan Atkinson. For anyone who's not English listening to this, Rowan Atkinson is a huge comedic actor. Like, he is massive. Blackadder. Think Blackadder. Rowan Atkinson is Blackadder. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, Blackadder. Mr. Bean.
So Mr. Bean, there you go. That's a good context. He's international. So my friends now, genuinely, they're like, no. We don't believe you. You're just trying to keep it under wraps. They genuinely think that Rowan Atkinson is your dad. And it's bloody hilarious. Is this true? Are you adopted by Mark?
I get multiple messages a week. Every week I will get messages on Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp. The WhatsApp one is crazy because I don't even know where they're getting my number. But from all around the world, mainly from people in India. Asking me if I can, could I get a cameo? Would my dad sign something for them? Like, and some people get quite irate. I'll be like, sometimes I'll just ignore it. Sometimes I'll reply and be like, you know, I'm not.
My friend James, he was like, it's on Wikipedia. It must be true, Jenny. His dad is Rowan Atkinson. No, James, I know his dad. It is definitely not Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah.
I just think maybe this is a big cover up and actually you're adopted.
Well, what's really difficult is that sometimes people get angrier and angrier at me that I'm not, and they'll start to offer me money to give them the things that they want. And sometimes I've been tempted. I'm like, could I be liable for this? Should I just make the video saying happy birthday to someone and take the money and be Rowan Atkinson's son? Yeah.
That is brilliant. Take them.
It is.
The internet's a weird place. Someone contacted me once saying, could they pay me to lunge them? They were training for a marathon and felt like if I chased them with a whip, it might encourage them to run better.
I don't think they were training for a marathon.
Pretty sure they weren't running a marathon.
I think.
Yeah.
How much did you get paid when you did it? That is an odd one. I can do another, a friend of mine. So when my coach, when I was an apprentice as a Cossack rider, his wife at the time was at the stables cleaning his trick saddle. And a fan of his came to the stables and was like, is that his saddle? And she was like, yeah, that's Guido's saddle. And so this stranger, this member of the public, went over and was pressing her face into the seat of his saddle and sniffing it because that's where he sat. Yeah. So this woman was like rubbing his saddle and sniffing it. And this is why, like, they're separated now, but his ex-wife, Sophie, she is incredible because she saw this and just went, you can clean it if you're going to hang around it like that. So then she just gave this woman the tack cleaner and was like, there you go. You clean his saddle and
Amazing.
Then you can leave. Thank you very much. Yeah.
That's just weird. I don't think I needed to know that information. Right. So I put a post. So again, my friend Jen. Hi, Jen. She was like, I love the podcast, Jenny, but sending helpful tips, are we, Jen? I'd love to hear you answer questions from the fans. I put out a post on Instagram. And because you shared it on your Instagram, which has like 4 million people following it, we've had so many questions. So I thought we could end today's pod with answering a few of people's questions. What do you think? There's so many on here. So a bit of kind of like podmin, bit of pod admin. Podmin. There's a few. There's a lot of people. Okay, you're not getting all the love. Someone, Sophie, has said, can we hear more about Jenny's career? And someone else has said how to get into presenting, SMP eventing. I wonder what SMP stands for. But I think under duress, we're going to record a Jen pod and you guys are going to ask me questions. But
yeah,
Simon wants to be in on that one. So we'll save those ones for next time. Just stop smiling. Stop looking quite so gleeful at this.
I can't wait to do the Gen pod. It's going to be amazing.
Remember, I get to edit it. Are you volunteering to edit it as well?
Maybe.
Okay, so Katie Lean, she says, I love the pod.
You're not going to give them anything on, like, Do you know? Any tips on becoming a presenter? Or are you saving all of that for the Gen Pod?
Don't fucking do it. My tip, to hang out with Ben and Simon. It's awful.
You like hanging out with us, you just don't like getting hold of us.
Yes, you're the worst. So, someone said, why isn't Jenny's microphone as good as Ben and Simon's? I don't know is the answer to that. I'm actually the one who edits it. It records what?
Actually, Jenny, when we began this adventure, when I was on the phone to you and I was in the bath and we talked for ages and said, let's start a podcast, you sent me a link saying, Ben, we are all going to use these microphones.
Yeah, buy one. I've got the same ones.
Have you got the same
ones? Why does mine work? Yeah, I tried that one. I've had to get rid of it because it didn't bloody work. Anyway, right. I love the pod. I really struggle with confidence with horses. Any general tips?
Alcohol.
Don't do it. Go to the pub instead. My tip would be stay within your comfort zone. If you're not feeling confident, don't fucking do it.
So my real tip would be let's choose something to be nervous about because it's easier. Say you're scared of jumping. You're scared of jumping. You'd really like to jump.
Yeah.
You love the idea of it, but whenever you do it, you're terrified. I want you to start by having a pole on the floor, like a trot pole, and get so that you can walk over it until you're bored. Walk over it till you're bored. Trot over it until you're bored. Canter over it until you're bored. Then make the tiniest cross pole in the world and repeat and go in that way. So the reason I know this works is because when I first started standing on Roman riding, which is standing on horses with no tack at all, no saddles, no bridles, nothing, it's terrifying because if it goes wrong, you're going to get decked. And so what I made myself do is I did half an hour of it every single day. So I had to do half an hour standing on the mid trot, and I had a timer on my phone. And every time I halted them or every time I sat down or fell off, the timer stopped. And I had to accumulate half an hour trotting, standing on them every day. And I realized one day that I was got my phone out while I was doing it and was scrolling through Instagram because I'd got so bored while I was doing it that I wasn't scared anymore. And so that is my go-to now for all the things that I do. Choose that. What would the smallest level of that be? What would be the smallest level of your goal? Like, for example, if it's just riding, then maybe you get on at the mounting block and you sit there talking to someone, or you sit there on the horse, stood still until you are bored, witless. Now it's time to start walking. Do you know what's your smallest first step? So that's would be my top tip for building confidence.
There we go. Bore yourself into submission.
Absolutely.
Love, Ben. This is where, again, people obviously don't follow me and follow you guys. Jenny, if you could compete in any discipline, which would it be? Well, I actually competed in eventing, but I compete under my married name, not Rudel, because I don't like people knowing what I'm doing. Again, hence why I'm not a very good influencer. So that's probably why no one knows that I event to any doing anything, why I get slated.
I didn't know you had a secret name for doing stuff. That's amazing. Yeah,
my Facebook and everything is all under my married name, so people don't know about stuff. Yeah. Well, you can ask me about it on the Gen Pod. But that was from Once in a Boo Moon. Okay. Ben, from Once in a Boo Moon as well. If Ben could do any other discipline, what would he do?
I see what I do as three different disciplines within reason.
Yeah.
So, like, there's the Roman riding, then there's the Liberty, and then there's the trick training. They live on the same street, but not in the same house. But if I was going to do anything else, I think there'll always be a small part of me that would just love to be a show jumper. Just always. Like, again, watching them in Ireland. I did it as a kid. And, like, now I'm like, oh, I wish I could be out there doing
that.
That's
cute. Yeah. I guess you want to hang out with Jay a bit more. That's all it is, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jay the Tiger Hallam. This is a good question from Fifion Coates. F-F-I-O-N. Anyway, what is one thing you'd like to learn off each other? Now, if Simi was here, I've had lessons with Simi, so he's very good at teaching. So I've learnt lots off him. But I think I learned from Simon how to be nicer to people because he's just such a nice person.
You know what? I was just about to say that. I was going to say Simon's ability to be given the worst news in the world, even if it's about him, or like you say, have a bad accident or something, and then he's just the person finding the positives. Or, how he messages us and we'll be like, Simon, what are you doing today? And he's like, I'm too busy to podcast. Here's my teaching schedule. And it's from like 7 a.m. till like 8 or 9 p.m. with like no break. And he's like,
no breaks.
It's great. And I'm happy. And I love it. And I'm like, I'd die. I'd need food. I'd need coffee. I'd like, I can do 7 lessons in a day and then I die. Like, yeah, those abilities from Simon and Jenny's ability to drink wine. If I could keep up with her, I would be strong as anyone.
Good, good. Glad we're in our place. Simon's a nice human. I'm an alcoholic. Good, thanks.
No, not an alcoholic. Just a fish.
What would I like to learn off Ben? His tact with speaking to people. Not. So this question's for you. A frankly amazing cob would like to know, how do you go about beginner training of liberty? Is this where you put your BAM hat back on?
Get signed up. Yeah, like, I can try and give you an answer here, and I really aren't just being a terrible marketing person. If you want to know how to start liberty, go on benatkinsonmethod.com, and the first week is free.
BAM!
BAM!
The first one's free?
The first week is free. The first week of BAM is free. So, like, if you're interested about how it starts, I'm not going to butcher it in 5 minutes on the end of a podcast. Go sign up. It's free. You got nothing to lose. And check it out.
Oh, there's so many good questions on here. Do you think we should do a couple more?
Yeah, keep going.
Jessica Thorpe has said, a stigma about working with horses that you would like to irradiate, but I think she means eradicate. Stigma Ooh. About working with horses you'd like to eradicate. Ooh, that's a good question.
That's very good. What do you think? What would you go for there?
But there's so many that are actually true. Horsey girls' cars look like dustbins. True. A stigma. Okay. There is a thing when you meet people, especially if you're at a wedding or something, and there's this thing, isn't there? Like, they like horses, so you'll like horses. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just because I work with horses, don't want to talk about them the whole time. I don't want to be sat next to the person who also has a horse at a wedding just because they have a horse. People think that horse people will always get on. But it's no different to anything else. Just because Ben wears weird vest tops like he's doing now doesn't mean he's going to get on with other people who wear them. There is a stigma around the fact that everyone thinks that horse people all like each other and want to get on. It's all very different. We're different people. I'm a person too. Like that horsey girl. She's a horsey girl. That really pisses me off. No, and I don't get on with a lot of horsey people. No, I don't get on with many people, as we're discovering from this podcast. Maybe the things people say online about me being a miserable cow are true.
I think.
But you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. It's like saying, well, you play golf, you play football, you play rugby. They're all sports with balls in them, so you'll all get on. Like, there's a big difference between what Boyd XL does, what I do, and, you know, what Carl Hester's doing. Like, they're completely different.
People who don't know about horses think that it's just one. People say to me, oh, you work with horses. Oh, what's a good bet to put on at Cheltenham this week? Fucking no. I know nothing about horse racing.
What's annoying is you probably know the person that you could call and find out.
Yeah, I do. I do. I do have a little black book in my phone. Yeah. I should just give Alice Plunkett a ring. She'll know. Or Ali Vance. Or, yeah, someone.
Mine would be that having horses means you have money.
Yes. Oh, my eyes went wide then.
I'm 90% sure that my granddad, my mum's dad, only said yes when my dad went to ask for my mum's hand in marriage, because all he really knew about my dad at that point was that he was a show jumper, and he just saw pound signs, thinking, obviously, if he's a show jumper, he's going to be a millionaire. And that is, I think it's such a funny thing, isn't it? So I think there are maybe like, there is 1%, maybe like 0.1% of people who own horses are filthy rich and have those ridiculous wagons and all of that stuff. And hilariously, the weird truth of that is that a lot of the people that have a lot of that get given it by sponsors. It is that, and like, then there's the rest of us who are in, you know, slogging with soggy hay nets in mud and on wellies, in our wellies in winter. And do you know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
We have them because we love them. We can't afford them, but we make it work.
Yes, exactly. Well, wait till you've got kids as well. Kids and horses. Yay! That's so cheap. I've got a life. I don't have a life. I feel like everyone's going to hate me now that they think I hate horse people. I don't. I just don't want to talk about horses 24/7, which a lot of people, horse people do.
Well, Ben, I know we're going to record another podcast in a minute with Jay Hallam, hopefully, if he can work his blooming phone. As always, it's been wonderful to chat to you. Thank you to everyone who sent Instagram messages in. And I can hear my kids screaming in the background, so better go sort that out. But all that is left to say, Ben, thank you very much. As always, it's Sharp and Ride.